everybody. My name is Earlene Deere, and I'm a grateful, very grateful alumni.
Hi.
And my group is the Corinth Group in Dallas, Texas. And I've been a member of that group for about 24 years. The first year, I really didn't have a home group. But after coming to Al-Anon, first let me say thank you. I want to say thank you to the, who is it that invited us? Thank you to the district for inviting us. It's really have been a pleasure to be here. And it's so funny because yesterday on the plane, I had this talk with God, and I asked him, you know, what did he want me to say today? I don't really know what he said, but we went over a lot of things. And as soon as I got here, I forgot, you know. So I said, well, whatever I'm supposed to say, God, today, you will let me say it. But number one, I'm really not a speaker. I'm only doing what I was asked to do. When I came into the program, I didn't want to be here because there was nothing wrong with me. I had a very sick, drunk alcoholic, and I didn't know that he was an alcoholic. I didn't know what he was. I just thought he was crazy. But let me just tell you how it started. We were high school, we grew up together. We were really kindergarten sweethearts. But it really didn't get serious until we got in high school. So we went through high school, graduated, went to college together. Well, while we were dating, he expressed to me the desire to become a doctor. And I asked him, you know, what did he want me to do? So he said, I want you to marry me, get a job, support me through college, and then everything's going to be okay. You're just going to have this great life. So I don't know why I believed him, but I did, you know. So I went to college this one year, and I started the next year. Well, we got married the second year in college. Well, things just didn't work out the way we had planned. I got pregnant, I think, probably the first time. So we had this baby, and I went to work after the baby came. 3 months later, I was pregnant again. So things just weren't working out the way we had planned. But we were very fortunate because at that particular time, we lived with his parents. And his mother and father were very supportive of us. And my mother and father, they were too. Well, my mother never worked, so she kept my babies while I went back to work. And at that time, my husband's father was the janitor at the hospital in Wagner. I forgot to tell you where I'm really from. I'm from Dallas, but we grew up in Oklahoma. I'm from a small town. I was born in Baggs, Oklahoma, but we moved to Wagner when I was very little. I don't even know how old. But we had a very, very good life as a child. Today I know that I'm really, truly blessed because my mom and dad were Christians. They didn't send us to church in Sunday school. They took us. And I grew up knowing right from wrong. A lot of things that happened in our family, you know, my dad, he was a farmer, but he was also a construction worker. And he didn't have any boys. He had four girls. And I have a sister that's 6 years older than I am. I have one that's 2 years younger than I am and one that's 10 years younger than I am. So we were kind of spaced there. And my dad had this farm, and we never could miss school to work on the farm. And we had all this garden and all these vegetables and all this meat. We had some of everything that you can name. We had cows and horses and chickens and ducks and geese and gardens and just stuff. But we didn't have anybody. My dad had to hire somebody to do all this work. So after school, we would have to come in and we'd have to change our clothes and go to the field and work. And I hated that. So I think this is one of the things that when Lewis said that he wanted to be a doctor, I said, okay, anything, because this is not the life that I want to live. I wanted to be not doing all that. So, anyway, after my childhood was really great. I'm also an Alateen sponsor, so I've heard a lot of stories with the Alateens that have really helped me. Maybe I helped them, but they helped me more than I helped them. For the last 15 years, I've sponsored Alateen, but the last year, it hasn't been as profitable, I guess, for me, because I've had a lot of other things to happen in my life. My parents are both 89 years old now, and my mother is in a nursing home, and my dad, he's still at home, still taking care of himself with the help of us. But for the last 5 years, the four girls, we've taken a week out of each month and gone home to take care of our parents. And this really hasn't been easy, because we all have families, and it has been a burden, but it hasn't, because we've enjoyed doing it. But it also was a great task on our families to leave our families and go take care of them. But my dad, you know, he's a very stubborn man, and he will not come and live with any of us. He will not leave his home. He's really sick, but he still walks, and he still gets in his truck every day, and he goes to the nursing home and sees my mother. He doesn't miss. So I was really kind of worried. I called him before I left to tell him that I was coming out here, because I talked to him every other day. And we have a cousin that's out here, and I think she's like 102. But he asked me, he says, do you know what Cousin Queenie's telephone number is? And I said, well, Dad, what for? He says, well, I just want to talk to her one more time. And it really kind of bothered me. I told my husband, I said, you know, he told me he hadn't been to the nursing home in 2 days to see my mother. And he never misses, because they are really, really close. They've been married 69 years. So I grew up in a very loving family. My aunt, she didn't have any children, and so she would always ask my mother if she could adopt me. And mother would tell her, no, you cannot adopt her, but I'll just loan her to you. So my aunt, she lived across the street from us in this great big house, and so I would go and stay with her when she was home, and she bought me all the nice things, and I was just kind of like I had two families. And it seems like when I was a child, everybody wanted me, or I was convenient for everybody to use. I'm not really sure. But I had an older aunt who was, at that time, probably in her 70s. And she lived alone. She was an old maid. She was my grandfather's sister. She always wanted me to come and live with her. So between staying with my aunt and taking care of my other aunt and being home with my mom and dad, I had a busy childhood. But it was good. It was really good. And I thank God today for all the things that we did at home. It was hard work. My family, my mom and dad never really told us all the time that they loved us, but we knew they did, because they disciplined us. We knew how far to go with anything. My dad, he took us everywhere we went. If we had to go to ball games, we went to everything. My mother never drove, so my dad had to do it all. He would come home, he would work hard on construction. He would come home, change his clothes, take us where we wanted to go, pick us up when everything was over. So we really didn't miss out on a lot. But my mom was just a stay-at-home mom, and she took care of the whole community. Everybody that was sick or needed anything, mother did it. And we used to have people to come by on the train. They were called hobos then. But they would come by, and I don't know how they would find our house, but mother always fed everybody that came by. So I think that this kind of rubbed off on all of us, because now, you know, and especially being in the program, I don't think either one of us know how to tell anybody no. But getting back to going with my husband, he started school, he finished college, I worked at the hospital in Wagner, and he went on to school in Northeastern. So he finished Northeastern, and he went to Kansas City to go to medical school. So needless to say, we didn't have enough money because of the two babies that I could not move up there with him. So he asked me to come and visit him like once a month. If I didn't go there, maybe he could come home every other week. So he had this old car, and he would come home and visit me once every other week, and then maybe once a month I could save up enough money and go up there to stay with him for a few days. Well, I really didn't realize he had a drinking problem. He drank at our prom, and I would see him drinking, you know, sociably, I guess, and it really didn't bother me because I didn't see any change in him when he drank. But one time, he had come home and we went somewhere, and all of a sudden he just ran into this car. And it was just really strange because we had been to Tulsa to see my sister, because she lived in Tulsa, and we were coming home. And he just ran like smack into this car. Well, he and my brother-in-law had been drinking, and I really didn't realize how much he had to drink. So after we had the accident, I questioned him. I said, "Well, Lewis, why did you do that?" He said, "Well, didn't you see him? He was just going too slow. He should have moved out of my way." And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, that doesn't sound too cool, but okay. So I started going to Kansas City to visit with him. And one day I was cleaning his room. He lived in this rooming house. And I went up cleaning from under the bed. I found all these half-pint vodka bottles. And I thought, well, where did this come from? I wonder what went on that he has all these bottles under the bed. Why didn't he throw them away? And then I said, well, why was he drinking in the first place? He's in school. So when he came home that evening, I told him, I said, "Lewis, what's this?" You know, and I showed him these balls. It was just a big can I had gotten. He said, "You know, we had a party over here the other night. Some of the guys came over and we had a party. And I don't know why they would have to have half-pint bottles, but I guess everybody was supposed to brought their own bottle. But anyway, he was saying that how this lady that he lived with was really ticky. Well, he didn't say ticky. He called her a bee. And he said that she raised all kind of sand so that they just put the bottles under the bed. Well, looking back, I think that was the first sign that I knew that something was really wrong, that this wasn't a normal thing to do. But things went on. We went back and forth, and he lucked out of medical school. And we, once he got out of medical school, he went to Flint, Michigan to do his internship. Well, this is actually when everything really started, because when he got there, the doctor that was, I guess, our friend, they both drank a lot. So the drinking really started in when he was doing his internship, our residency. And so we stayed there for a year, and things went okay, but we started having fights because he would come home drunk, and he was always accusing me of doing something that I didn't do. And, you know, I think at that time, all I wanted to do was for him to get through school so that we could have a normal life. But we did. He got through school. But going back, I was really basically happy up there because this was the first time that I had been on my own. I had gone out and we had I don't know what they call them now. I guess they are apartments, but all the residents, it was about six of us that lived in the same complex. Maybe it's a townhouse now. But I had gone out and furnished this townhouse because he was really making good money, like $1,200 a month, I guess it was. You know, I can't remember. But back then, it was a lot of money. So I had furnished our little apartment, and I was just really happy, happy, happy with all the things that I had bought. And so when it came time for us to leave, his internship was up. He said, "You and the kids, you catch the train and you go home, and I'll bring the stuff, I'll bring all of our things back with me when I come. I'll get a U-Haul and I'll bring it all back." So I was, you know, pretty happy with that because I told him, I said, okay. So I had packed things and gotten things all ready for him to bring back to Oklahoma. Well, when he came back to Oklahoma, he didn't bring anything but just his car. And he left everything up there. So I said, Louis, I said, what happened to all of our furniture? What happened to everything that we bought? He said, oh, we didn't need that stuff. We just, you know, I just gave it to, if that's the chick, there was one guy, he used to babysit the kids. Well, they were big boys, but he used to keep them for me when we were up there. He said he'd given our stuff to him. So I said, oh, okay. Well, soon after that, this doctor in Dallas called and asked him if he would come down to Texas and set up practice with him. Well, he had already set his practice up, but he said he needed someone to help him in his practice. So he didn't really ask me if I wanted to go to Dallas. He just told me, he said, well, we're moving to Texas. And I said, oh, we are? He says, yes, we're going. He says, Dr. Chambers has given me an offer, and I'm going down, and I'm going to practice with him. Well, we did. Things went okay. We moved to Dallas. We got an apartment, and we did really great. It seems as if his drinking didn't bother us that much, and if it did, it seemed like everybody was doing it. Everybody in the complex, they would get together on whatever night and play cards and drink. And so that, to me, it was okay. This went on for a while. And after a while, I decided that I needed a home. So I told him, I said, we need to move out of the apartment. We need to get a home. So he said, okay. So this guy came by one day, and he was selling sewing machines. And I told him, I said, today he's our friend. I said, Cleo, I don't need a sewing machine. I need a home. He said, well, there's one on our street that this professional basketball player, he's getting ready to sell. So, and he really wants to sell this house, so he'll probably give you a good deal on it. So I called him, and we talked about it, and he did. We went back and forth making the deal on the house. But anyway, we bought this home, and we moved in this home. So our children, They were still in elementary school at that time. And after we moved, I know things started to change. Louis started buying things that we didn't need, and he started doing things that, it seems like it was reversed, because he would go to work and come home, and then he wouldn't work for a while. And then all of a sudden he'd start back working, he would work again, and then he bought this boat, and he doesn't fish, he doesn't go, he's not a person that, I don't do any of that. He bought this big boat and put it out on Lakeway Hubbard, so we're supposed to go out there on the weekends and, you know, enjoy this boat. We never did. Then he bought this Winnebago that he parked in the yard, and it just sat there, and the kids made a playhouse out of it because nobody drove it. And all the neighborhood kids came, and they just had a good time in this Winnebago. And then he went in and bought a new car, and, you know, I was saying, well, where are we getting this money, and why isn't he working like he used to? But he was a sporadic drinker. He would drink for maybe a week or so, and then he would work for 3 or 4 months, and then all of a sudden he'd stop. And so things just started, they got good for us for a while. They really did. And I can't even explain how good they got. But then it started getting worse. And I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't figure out what it was. I knew that people lived a certain way, and I didn't have anything to compare it to but my family. And I know my dad never drank. He always worked. He never missed any day's work unless he was really sick, and he was a lot of times. But this was a different kind of a thing that we were going through. So all of a sudden, he just stopped working for a while. And I would ask him, you know, what's the problem? He said, oh, we have enough money, you know. So I went along with this for a while. And then I think the doctor that worked with him, he called me and told me that, you know, he said, we do have a problem. You know, Lewis is missing too much work and he's not seeing his patients, and, you know, and I knew that he was, but what could I do about it? Well, this is when I think the insanity set in with me, because when they did the skit today, it was so funny because I called Herbert every day and would give him a different lie as to why Lewis wasn't at work. And I knew, he probably knew I was lying, but this is just one of the things that you did. So this went on, and he would go back to work, and then I would call in again and tell him all these stories. So one day, our son got sick. He had to go to the hospital. And I took him to the hospital, and he had to stay in the hospital. And so Lewis was home. This was during one of his stretches where he wasn't working. So the doctor said that he had to have surgery. So I told him, I came home and I told him, so he told me, okay, go ahead. Well, this was dead winter time. It was really, really, the weather was bad. And at that time, we don't have a lot of snow now, but it seems like at that time we had ice and snow on the ground. Well, I had called his father up and told him that Lewis Jr. was ill and that he had to go to the hospital, and I really didn't tell him that much about Lewis. I just told him he wasn't working and that I needed some help. Well, his dad came up, and I was at the hospital with Lewis Jr., and I had been there for about 5 days. And Lewis never came to see him. He always, when I would come home and change clothes and do whatever, he always told me that, I'll be there tomorrow. Okay, so tomorrow never came. And I would tell the doctor, because he and this doctor went to school together, and he would always ask me where Lewis was, and I would make some kind of excuse as to where he was or why he wasn't there. Well, his father came down to stay with us, and that night that I brought Lewis Jr. home, his dad decided he was going to stop all this nonsense with his drinking. So he poured all the liquor out in the house. He poured it down the drain so that Lewis wouldn't have any more liquor to drink. So, okay, I was so tired and so exhausted, and I came in, and I took a shower, and I got ready for bed, and I put Lewis Jr. down, and, you know, I went in our bedroom, and he was shaking. And I didn't know what his problem was. And he was just shaking. He was shaking and shaking. So I called my best friend that lived down the street, and I told her, I said, Bernice, come here. I said, something is wrong with Lewis. I said, he is really shaking. So she came down, and we ice packed him down, and we put alcohol on him and ice and all this stuff. Well, things didn't get any better. The next morning, he went into full-blown DTs. And I had to take him to a hospital. Well, I didn't take him. I called the ambulance because he had passed out. He ran out of the house and passed out just in the yard. And the ambulance came, and they took him to the hospital, and I went with him. Well, the doctors asked me, what is his problem? And I said, I don't know. They said, well, he acts like he's in DTs, or he's having withdrawals from alcohol. I said, oh, no, he doesn't drink. And he said, well, does he take drugs? I said, no, he doesn't do that either. So with all the Valium and all the Cetamol and all the other things, I knew he was taking. But I said to myself, now, if I tell these people that he's taking drugs and he's drinking alcohol, they're going to take his license, and he's not going to be able to practice anymore. Well, he wasn't doing that much practicing anyway. But that just goes to show you how sick I was, and I was so in denial of his problem. This went on for several years. But one day, I decided to take my children and go home. I said, I have just got to get away from this situation. So I took my two boys, and I went home and stayed a week. Well, when I came back, it was something really strange about our house. It just wasn't the same. And it seems like the dishes were in the sink and just nobody had lived there. And so when I got in, I sat there for a few minutes and the telephone rang. And it was a friend of ours, and he said, I think you need to come over here. He said, something is terribly wrong with Lewis. He's just not right. So the guy had come by. Lewis had gone into DTs, had fallen in the den, and broken his shoulder, well, he broke the shoulder in the shower, but he had vomited and he was in convulsions and he was in our DM4. Well, the guy didn't know what to do with him, so he took him home with him. Well, I called the hospital and they told me to bring him to the hospital. I did. I took him into the hospital and they told me I better call his mom and his family because they didn't think he was going to live until morning. Well, it was a nurse in the hospital at that time, and I was really upset. I called his sisters. He has two sisters at that time. They both living in Oklahoma, and they both were nurses. And so she got on the plane. One of them got on the plane, and she came down the very next day. But while he was in the hospital, the nurse that was taking care of him, she told me, she says, "Hon, you need Al-Anon." Well, I looked at her like, you know, and then she told me, she says, "I'm an alcoholic." And I thought, well, if you're an alcoholic, why are you taking care of my husband? And so I guess she saw the expression on my face and she said, "You need to go to Al-Anon." Well, I thought, well, what is Al-Anon? Is it a pill that I take or is it, what do I do with it? So it just went right out the window. I still didn't get it. So it was time went on. I think he stayed in the hospital like 20 days. And when he came out, he vowed to me that he would never, ever take another drink and that he just wouldn't, you know. That lasted about a week. A week later, he was drinking again. So the doctor that was in the hospital, I talked to him and I said, you know, something has got to be done because this keeps going on and on and on and he isn't getting any better. So he said, Earlene, he said, "Really, I tell you what, I don't really know what's wrong with Lewis." He said, "I'm going to put him back in the hospital and we're going to run all kind of tests and see exactly what his problem is." Well, he put him back in the hospital and so every day Lewis would call me and he'd tell me, "Would you bring me some Valium? Would you bring me some of whatever he was taking, the tranquilizers, the Siganol?" I was taking it to him, you know. So the doctor knew something was wrong, so he told me, he says, "Early, we're going to have to put a no visitor sign on Lewis's door because somebody is coming bringing him medicine to the hospital that he's not supposed to have." I said, "I don't know who that could be." So anyway, he got out of the hospital that time, and I was, you know, I don't know whether I felt guilty because I didn't want him shaking. I didn't know what his problem was. And nobody ever told me he was an alcoholic except for the lady that was in the hospital. And she just said that she was an alcoholic and I needed Al-Anon. But as time went on, things went from bad to worse. We started, the kids started getting bad grades in school. So I don't know how I did this, but I took them out of public school and put them in private school. I guess I thought that was going to help, which we couldn't afford in the first place, but I did. And from time to time, it seems like he would get better. He would go back to work, and he would do the things that he was supposed to do, and then it would just get worse all over again. So I never really told his mother and father. I don't know why I couldn't bring myself to tell anybody what was going on in our family. And every time they would call me and ask me what was happening, I would lie. I would say he was doing okay or he had the flu or whatever. I never really, and I just couldn't identify what his problem was. And so at that time, I was in the church, and I had a lot of friends, and my friends used to call me all the time, and they would always say how spiritual I was, and I would go to church every Sunday. I never missed. And we had this minister, and I guess the good thing was that I'm Methodist and Lewis is Baptist, so he never went to my church, but the ministers always would ask me about him and said they wanted to meet him. So one day I had been sick and I had gone into the hospital and the doctor told me I needed surgery and I said, well, there's no way I can have surgery because if I have surgery, who's going to take care of, who's going to run things? So I went in the hospital and I stayed a week and I came back and the minister came to visit me. And so he said, "Earlene, I would just love to meet your husband." He said, "I've heard so many nice things about him and he's this, that, and the other." And I said, "I agree." I said, "Reverend Walker, he is." We were sitting in the living room and I was thinking, you know, he said, "Where is he?" I said, "Oh, he's at the hospital making rounds." So he sat there for about a half an hour, and we talked. And he said, well, I tried to wait on him, but I think I better leave. So he got up, and he said he would pray for us, and I said, thank you. He hadn't even closed the door good. When Lewis walked out of our bedroom and walked down the hall stark naked, he didn't have not one stitch on. And, you know, and he walked into the living room, and I was still sitting there. And I thought, you know, what would I have told my minister with this naked man walking down out of my bedroom down the hall? Today, I don't know what I would have said. But anyway, I finally did tell his brother in Chicago. I said, he had called one day and he wanted to talk to Lewis, and I said, well, Sonny, Lewis is really out of it. I said, he can't talk to you. And he says, Mother called me and told me that Lewis has a drinking problem. And I said, she did? He says, yes. So I said, well, we need to bring him up here so that we can get some treatment for him. I said, what are you going to do? He said, don't worry about it. He said, I said, well, Sonny, we don't even have any money. At that time, we had two houses, and Lewis had bought another house. I don't know how we did all this, but he had bought another house. We were behind on all these house notes, and everything was due. So I told him, I said, we can't afford treatment. I said, I don't know what we're going to do. He said, well, I'll send you the money. So he sent the money for me to send Lewis to Chicago. Well, Lewis got the money before I did, and he drank it up. So I called him back and told him, I said, we're not coming. He's not coming. I said, I can't come. I said, because I have the children. So this time, he said, I'll send him a ticket to come. And he said, so you get him ready and send him up here. He said, he needs some help. So this time he did, and I never will forget this Sunday. I told Lewis, and Lewis agreed. He says, yes, I'll go. And we were getting him ready, and everything just happened. I don't know. It's just like one thing right after the other. So I knew that he was going to miss the plane because he had like a 3 o'clock flight, and it was like 2 o'clock before we left home to take him to the airport. And I asked one of my neighbors, I said, will you go with me to help me get Lewis on the plane? I said, because if I let him out, he's not going to get on the plane. I said, so somebody's going to have to see that he gets on that plane. So anyway, Cleo came down. He's the one that helped me get the house. And he drove us to the airport, and I knew that we weren't going to make it, but the plane was an hour late. So God was working in our favor. So we put him on the plane and sent him to Chicago. Well, he got so drunk on the plane that Sonny wouldn't even take him home with him. He took him straight to the hospital that night. So after he had been there for about 7 days, the counselor called me, and she said, she talked to me. She says, your husband's in the hospital, and he has a drinking. He doesn't have a drinking problem. She said, he's an alcoholic. And I said, thank God. And she said, what? I said, well, I'm just glad to know he's something. I said, I thought he was just crazy. So, and he was. He was just crazy, but he was also an alcoholic. So she said, I think you need to come up here because you need some counseling, too. I said, there's nothing wrong with me. I said, he's the problem. And she said, yes, but it's the family disease. I said, no. I said, I can't leave my children. I can't come. So she said, well, I tell you what, we'll just have a 3-way conversation on the phone. We'll just counsel you on the telephone. So we did that, and everything she would ask me, I said, Lewis, did you hear that? Do you know that you're an alcoholic? Are you going to do better? And, you know, I was still in control. So he says, yes, he knew that he was an alcoholic. So he stayed his month in Chicago. Well, when he came home, he told me that he wasn't well, but he wasn't drinking. So, and every day I'd watch to see, because the counselor had told me, she said, now, he can never, ever drink again. And I said, well, that's great for me. She said, now, even when your children get married, whatever celebrations you have, anniversaries, whatever, she said, he cannot drink. I said, does he know that? She says, and then I told Lewis, I said, do you know that you can't drink ever again? He says, yes, I know. So anyway, as time went on, he started going to AA meetings. So he went to the Oak Cliff group one night, and he had gone several times to these meetings. And he said, you know, they have Al-Anon at the meetings. And I said, well, what is that? So I remember this lady saying Al-Anon. Then I thought, that's not for me. I don't have a problem. It's you. You just keep going to your meetings. So he kept going. And so one night he came in and he handed me a note that this lady had written me. And she said, so you love an alcoholic too. Call me Jean. So I put it on the dresser, and I thought, I'm not calling her because I don't have a problem. And, you know, it was a while, because as soon as Lewis got sober, he was going to meetings like 2 and 3 times a day, and he, AA just became his life. So he was just doing everything in AA and helping other people, and he just had completely just like ignored me. And so one day I told him, I said, you know what? I said, something's not right here. I said, I'm the one that did all this, and I mean, it would take me days to tell you how things went when he was drunk. But that's not what I want to say. I want to tell you how the disease affected me, because I was in such denial that I didn't think I had a problem. But when he started doing things for other people and working his program and sponsoring people, I got a big, big resentment. And then on top of that, he started sending to Oklahoma to get the drunks in Oklahoma to come and live with us so he could sober them up. And so I thought, now, you know, this has really gone too far. And but I was taking care of him, taking care of them, doing all the things with the kids, and I had joined all these groups, and I mean, I just had a really, really busy life. But I was so unhappy. And so one day, I looked at this note that this lady had said, call me Jean. And I called her, and she said, Earlene, you need Al-Anon. She said, why don't you come to some Al-Anon meetings? And I said, okay. So she said, I'll come and get you if you want me to. So she did. And at that time, I didn't know a black person in Al-Anon, and we had no black groups there. So she was Caucasian. She came and she picked me up, and she took me to my first Al-Anon meeting. Well, it really didn't, you know, I was just there. I know that it was a regular meeting, but it wasn't for me. So when she called me back, she said, well, how are you doing? And I said, I'm doing the same. I'm still miserable, and nothing is working for me. She said, well, keep coming back. So I said, okay, I'll come back. So I started going with Lewis. They would have an Al-Anon meeting the same night as he would go to his AA meetings. So every time I went, they were so nice. Everybody was so loving, so kind. And I would read the steps and read the traditions and the slogans and everything. But I wasn't getting it. But every time she would call me, she said, keep coming back. Just keep coming back. Just show up. So I said, okay, I can follow these instructions. I'll just keep coming back. But, you know, I was going for the wrong reason. I was going to keep Lewis sober. I wasn't going for anything that my feelings. I was just so consumed with him because he had been my priority. Well, ever since we've been married, I just had to keep him straight. So one day, I went to a meeting, and a lady told my story. And I thought, so I need to start working on me. So Jean, bless her heart, she didn't give up on me. We did the steps, and she would encourage me, and one day she asked me, she says, Earlene, come on, I'm going to take you to another group, and I want you to speak. I said, Jean, I've never spoken anywhere in my life. She said, oh, you can do it. Come on, I'm going to take you. She said, well, if it's just 5 minutes, you're going to speak. So she took me to my first speaker's meeting, and I think I spoke maybe 30 minutes. I'm not really sure. But I kept coming back. And then all of a sudden, Lewis decided that he was going to start an Al-Anon group. He would go to Preston every Saturday morning to their Al-Anon group. And he would come back, and he would bring me all this literature and books and things. And then we had a friend who came to visit us. And you probably know Joe in Little Rock. he and Lou Bell came and visited with us. Well, he was an old-timer in the program. And Lou Bell bought me my first Al-Anon book, and she gave me a leather-bound cover with my name on it. And I thought, well, this is really neat. So I kept that book, and I would read it, and Jean would encourage me, and she just kept saying, it'll get better. You know, it's going to get better. Just keep coming back. So after a while, Lewis started going to conventions. And he said, would you like to go with me to AA conventions? And I said, sure. So I really enjoyed the AA speakers a lot better than I did the Al-Anons at first. But then I, at that time, you probably, a lot of you probably have heard Winnie and Ramona and Nell and all these people. And these ladies were, they had what I wanted. You know, I just couldn't believe that anybody could live with an alcoholic and be that happy. So after a while, I decided, you know, this isn't so bad. And after Lewis started the group, the Corinth group, I had a neighbor at that time, and she was an older lady. And she had about three or four, well, she had five kids. They weren't kids, they were adult people. They were all alcoholics. And Lewis had she said he sobered them up, whatever, that was her choice. She said, Lewis had sobered my kids up, so he talked her into going to Al-Anon. So she would go to Al-Anon every week, and she would just go every week, and she would call me, she said, well, why didn't you come? I would make some excuse, you know, I said, well, I'm going to the Oak Cliff group. She said, no, you need to come to this group, you come on. So she just kept after me. And then one day, she called me up, and she said to me, she said, you know, you have gone through the bad times with your husband. She said, now that things are getting good, she says, you're going to just sit there and let some other woman come in and enjoy the benefits of all the good things. And I thought, you know, does she know something that I don't know? So I said, okay, you know, I'm going to continue to go to Al-Anon. And I did. I couldn't get enough of Al-Anon. I was going to the conventions. I was going to my meetings every day. I was just doing, I was working the steps. I was calling people. I even actually volunteered at the Al-Anon Information Center. And I just got hooked on Al-Anon. Well, the same sponsor, the one that, Johnny is her name, she asked me, she said, well, why don't you start? I had been in the group, I know, 13 years. And she says, why don't you start an She said, why don't you start an Alateen group? I said, I am not going to be bothering anybody's kids. I said, no. And so she says, well, the children, she said, I have grandchildren and they need it. I said, that's not my problem. She said, oh, yes, it is. It is your problem. And she just kept after me, and I said, this woman is getting on my last nerve. So she said, one day she said, well, I'm coming to a meeting. She said, I'm going to bring my grandchildren, and we're just going to start an Alateen meeting. So she said, will you show up? I said, okay. So she brought her two grandchildren, at that time was two. And then another child showed up. We had three. So that, you know, she said, okay, you go to the information center, you get the books, you do this, and you do. She gave me directions. I'll follow directions, and I did. So we started this Alateen group. And really, it just took off. I've been doing this for the last 15 years, and I tell you, there is no greater reward than working with children. And the thing about it is, my boys went to Alateen, but they had a sponsor who was, she was an alcoholic, and she was very rough on them. And they would come home and tell me, we're not going back. We're just not going back because we don't like her. They didn't, and I didn't insist that they go back, but I know they missed out a lot on, you know, in our team, but they were always so supportive of Al-Anon and AA. I think they were so happy to see us getting along and to see that their dad was sober and that I wasn't so crazy anymore. Because I look back on the things that I did to my children and I know how I damaged them. Because I was wanting my husband to look bad in their eyes. And I would, when they did the skit today, I could see myself pulling my husband across the floor, and I would tell my son, come help me get him up, because he's going to stay here and get pneumonia. But I should have left him there, you know. And I would always tell them, you know, I think I was trying to shame Lewis into sobriety. That's what I wanted to do. And it just didn't work. And I didn't have sense enough to know that it was a disease. So today I know that alcoholism is a disease, and it is a family disease. And not only, I was crazier than he was. I couldn't take a pill and pass out when he did all these things. His patients used to call me and they would tell me, oh, he's so nice and he's so this and he's so that and we're going to die if he doesn't come back to the office. And I thought, I sure wish he would, because he is just driving me crazy. But he was a good person, and I couldn't understand, as when he was sober, he was the best, sweetest, kindest, loving person that you ever seen. But when he took that first drink, it was just like another person came out. And he was always at home. He was an at-home alcoholic. And he just drove me crazy. And I would tell my neighbor, I said, what do I do with him? And one time when he went into DTs and went to the hospital, and the doctors they asked me, you know, all these questions, and I lied again and again and again. So after they did all they could do for him, they told me, I said, well, what are you going to do for him? They said, well, we can't keep him against his will. And I said, well, I can't keep him. I don't need him. And the doctor said, but, you know, he has to go back home because he will not admit himself to the hospital. Well, this was before he went to Chicago. And, you know, it wasn't really easy. Like I said, I went through a lot. I put myself through a lot. You know, I allowed things to happen because I wasn't working my program. I was just working his program. I thought I had to do all these things to keep him sober. But one day, I just told him, you know, I said, I don't have to do this. I don't have to take care of all these drunks. This is you. If this is what you want to do, fine. But from now on, I have to put me first. And I started really doing this. It's a selfish program, but you know, that's what it took for me. And to a certain extent, I'm really like him, because we never tell anybody no. We always seem like we're there to help, or if anybody calls and needs help. And I remember how I felt when I came to my first meeting. A lady came in the meeting the other day, and she was so bitter and so angry and so upset and so hurt, and she cried. And I started crying too, because that was me when I came. I just knew that nothing could help me. My situation was so bad that I just didn't know of anybody that lived like that, that went through the things that we went through and survived. So today, I really want to say to the newcomers that if you don't hear anything that you think could help you, don't give up. Keep coming back, because this program really works. It has worked in my marriage. We celebrated 43 years of marriage on the 12th of April. And I know without this program, that's an impossible thing. And today, I have two sons that they're married, and I never thought I was going to have a grandchild, because they've been married 13 and 14 years. Well, this in August, God blessed us with a granddaughter, and that has really, really been a blessing in our lives. We've had a lot of things to happen to us this year. We've lost dear, dear friends and relatives, and the sister-in-law that was responsible for Lewis coming to Chicago, she was the one that I talk to all the time, and her husband is Lewis's brother, but she and I were very close. She had one brother, and he died about 5 years ago. But even before then, all through our marriage, the whole 43 years, she and I had been just really close, just closer than really sisters. She got cancer about 8 years ago, and we thought that it was, you know, we thought that everything was okay, but it reoccurred. And on the 29th of August, she passed away. And that was just a real, real trauma for me because Lewis and I had gone to a convention, and when we came back, it was almost Mother's Day. It was the week before Mother's Day, and she called me. She says, I have some bad news. And I said, well, Sadie, what is it? And she said, well, you know, my cancer is back, and the doctor says it's terminal. And we talked, and when I got off the phone, I cried and I cried and I cried. And then I went to the florist, and I sent her the biggest bouquet of flowers that I could, because I said the next week was Mother's Day, and I wrote her this letter and told her how much I loved her, how much I appreciated her. And before 3 months later, one of our best friends that we grew up together, he was just like a brother. He lived in Houston, and he just thought of our house as his house. He would come whenever he got ready. He had leukemia, and he didn't want us to know, and he passed away about 3 months later. The doctor that brought Lewis to Dallas and was in the Lewis got him in the program just years ago. He was sober for years and years. And it was so funny because they had the big fight, and they both, at the time, Herbert wasn't, I don't know what he was, but he hadn't hit his bottom. He hadn't hit rock bottom. But Lewis was the one that helped him to come back, and so he was a big part in his sobriety. We buried him about 3 weeks ago, and my brother-in-law of 40 some years, he passed just after Christmas. We've had a lot of things happen to us this year, but I want to say that the program, working these steps and practicing these principles and all of our affairs have really, really worked in our lives. It's been, you know, when I was a child, I used to watch television all the time. And I would look at all the adventure programs. I always wanted to go places and do things. And in the Methodist Church, that was about the only place that I could go and do anything was at the Sunday school conventions or the Congress or whatever. But anytime they'd ask anybody, do you want to be a delegate? I raised my hand. I want to go. And if it wasn't but 50 miles away, send me. I'll go because I just always like to travel. So that was one of my goals, was to travel. When I got grown and was on my own and was doing all this stuff, I just really, really, really wanted to travel. Well, the first year that Lewis was sober, the next year I got a chance to take my children to Europe. So one of our friends, she was a teacher at Langston University then, and she called me and she said, do you know, we're taking a tour. She said, your kids are not in college, but they are in high school, and if you would like to go, I'll see that you go. And so I said, fine. So we took I think it was a 21-day tour, and we went to London and to Paris and to France and to Rome, and we just took a tour. It was just wonderful, and I just got hooked on it. I just loved to travel. So when I came back, and my sister-in-law, the one that's passed away, she told me, she says, well, you know, I was telling her about Rome, and she says, well, oh, I'd love to go to Rome. She said, well, you know, Sonny won't even fly. I said, well, I'll go with you. So she said, you will? You'll go back again? I said, I will. I'll go with you. So she and I went back to Rome, and we had a time, but the language was a problem with her because with my children, we had tour guides and we had all these people with us to explain everything. We didn't have that when we went back, so she kind of put a damper on things. She says, I don't like it over here. I can never order what I want to eat, and I'm just frustrated, and we would take the guide, the tours, and she didn't understand. But we made it. I had a good time. So after that, I just got hooked, and I asked Lewis, I said, Lewis, would you like to go places with me? And he said, fine. So one year we had an opportunity to go to Egypt. We went to Egypt, and we spent maybe 3 weeks in Egypt. Then we started going all over the United States. Once we were asked to go to Nova Scotia to speak, he spoke there. We had a wonderful time there. And then we started taking cruises with our booms. Somebody in the AA program started that. So they wrote us and they said, would you like to go on a cruise with our booms? And we said, sure. So we went on the cruise, and the one cruise 1 year and the next, and we've gone to I don't know how many cruises without booze. And then on our 32nd, I guess it was the 30th and 32nd or 35th anniversary, we had an opportunity to go on this cruise. And this was really supposed to be a cruise of a lifetime. We went to New York because he loves New York, and we spent 3 or 4 days in New York, and we left New York and we went to Nice, and we spent 3 or 4 days in the French Riviera. We left there and we cruised all the way through Greece and Yugoslavia, and we ended up in Rome and Venice and Milan, and we flew all the way back. And you know, it was wonderful, but that was just too much time. That was too much togetherness. We almost got a divorce after we got back home. But I said all that to say that, you know, all the things that I've ever really, God has been so good to us in this program that I can't even explain it to you. Working with the teenagers, this one group that I started, one of the counselors from one of the schools, she called and asked me if I would start a group at her school because she knew how badly it was needed. So I started another our teen group at the school. Then another lady called me and she said, well, would you start one at the recreation center in South Dallas? And I said, sure. So, you know, I was just that crazy. I thought I could do all these three groups, and I did have some help with one, but the other two, they said, no, they said, we're not doing it. It's just too much. But with taking care of my parents and taking care of a lot of other things that have happened in our lives, along with all the sickness and illness, this last past year has been really a big, it has been a big burden in our lives. But even with the program, I mean, we couldn't have made it without it, because we've had people in the program who have encouraged us, who have called us. And I had a lady to call me last week from Memphis, and she just talked. She said, I saw you down here when you were in Memphis, and I just wanted to talk and say hello. And I also wanted to ask you if you would find a doctor for my granddaughter. She lives there in Dallas, and she doesn't have an internist. And I told her, I said, well, I just came back from the doctor because I had the flu, and I gave her the number. She called me, and I have friends that send me all kinds of gifts from all over the world. I have just things, and the people that we've met, we just can't explain this program. We would have never enjoyed life like it is today without Al-Anon and AA. And I think a lot of times when I was going through my trials and tribulations with my drunk alcoholic, and, you know, I asked God, I said, God, what have I done to deserve this? You know, what have I done so wrong that my life is so miserable and things are so bad? And today I can say the same thing. God, what have I done to deserve the blessings that you have bestowed upon us in our sobriety in Al-Anon? Because there are no words to describe it. It is a miracle, and it's really God's amazing grace that has saved our whole life, our livelihood. And today I'm really grateful because I don't interfere in my children's lives. I have two sweet daughter-in-laws, and to this day we have never really had an argument. My daughter-in-law that just had the baby, I think she waited so long until she's so obsessed with the grandbaby that I don't get to see it and see her and do what I want to keep the baby, and she tells me my life is too full. And I know she's right in a way, but I still, you know, I just never knew the joy of being a grandmother. So this is just really overwhelming to me. But she tells me, she says, your life, you go everywhere and you do everything and you're never home and all this. And so I said, well, you're right, Vicki. And she says, well, I don't want you not to be able to do for your parents either. She said, because I know that when they need you, you need to go. And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate her thoughtfulness. And I appreciate, you, the Alamans, for being here when I needed you. Because you may not be the same person that greeted me when I walked through those doors, but with your hugs and your encouragement and your kindness, and you kept telling me to come back, there are no words to describe today the gratitude that I have for you. And I just like to say that if you are ever in Dallas, and if you ever need a friend, if you ever want to call me, if anything, feel free to. We're in the phone book. We don't have an unlisted number. We have AAs and Alamans in our home at all times. And God has blessed us with a great big house that we just, the two of us. And so there's no problem. If you need to stay all night with us, that's good. That's fine. We don't care, you know. And sometimes we had company last week, the week before, and it's okay. You know, I used to knock myself out, but you know you're at home and we do what we can, and we're just blessed to have family members that we can identify with. We had this friend that I was talking about. Lewis sent for him when he sobered up, and he came down. We all went to school together. We grew up together, and he was really bad. I mean, he was worse than Lewis if you could get that way. But he and his wife are our dear, dear friends now, and he has a brother that lives in Dallas, and they've been coming to see us ever since they were there last week. And their brother has this beautiful, gorgeous home that they just built, and you know, they stay with us. They really do. They feel just that close that we're their family, and we identify with each other. And they've gone on the cruises and all the things, and we've taken vacations together and all over. And so, like I said, God has really been good to us in this program, and I hope that He will be just a little bit, I mean, just a little bit better to us, that we can reach out and help others the way that we've been helped, because this is what it's all about. And I hope that I'll always be here if an Al-Anon needs help. I volunteer at the Al-Anon Information Center, and I used to drive over there across, but Central is terrible now, so I give them my number, and they call me at home. And sometimes even when I'm not on call, they still call me. People keep my number, and they call me all the time. And it's really funny. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to sit down because I've probably gone way over my time. But Lewis is a psychiatrist, and he has a lot of, and his specialty is alcohol addiction. So he has a lot of people who come through that need Al-Anon, and they don't really know they need Al-Anon. And he'll just say, well, you call my wife and talk to her. And so they called me, and we talk. And so it was really funny. One day he came home. He says, you know what? He said, I think you've talked enough. He said, you're interfering in my practice. He said, the people tell me they don't need me anymore. They need to talk to you. So it works. This program really works. But you have to give it away to keep it. And that's what I try to do. I don't call myself a speaker because I'm not. I just want to share my experience, strength, and hope, and hopes that you or somebody that you know will find some of the happiness that we've been able to enjoy in this program. And thank you again for inviting us. You've all been so sweet and so kind. And may God bless you, and I love each of you.